Blog Talk Radio.
Greetings. Welcome to another segment of New Day, Resurrection and Liberation. My name is Empress Chi, and we thank you for tuning in to this segment of course, one of the official broadcasts for the Universal Million Woman Movement.
From Senegal, West Africa, thankful with Missouri. Thanks to Catherine Donald, giving my pops his glory. He came down with his drum and a dream to change the world in a free, afflicted world. That's all he ever want. Mom came a little after, gave birth to my brother. Then all of the pressure made them fight one another. See, the pain would never last if the best was what they had. Knew the world was out for grabs, and he pushed to find his freedom.
Again, welcome to this segment of New Day, Resurrection and Liberation. Of course, we always talk about freedom. And if you're not striving for it, well, more than likely, you really are non-existing.
As a kid, I never knew. Got the hustle just to make it through. So I found myself skipping school. But the girls don't think I'm cool. And because of that, I didn't care whether or not I was a kid. I just want to be treated fair. Cause it's all I ever knew. Me, I need to slow down. Everybody in the whole town, cause they know how I get down. Far enough from another town. If you really win to the world, have to hold me in the ground. If we ain't gonna stop now until we get that
freedom, also about justice. Again, my name is Empress Chi, and you are in tune to New Day, Resurrection and Liberation. Before we begin our program for tonight, as usual, we always give thanks and praises to our Creator, and certainly we are always very appreciative of our freedom-fighting ancestors. Well, needless to say, many today are, in fact, observing what some call the Juneteenth celebration, even though, of course, Juneteenth is not really until June the 19th, but nevertheless, you just see the weekend, it's a good time to begin that process. And that's kind of why we started things off tonight, because, again, many are observing the Juneteenth kind of activities. And, you know, for some of us, we observe fighting for freedom every day. So while, you know, some might look at the various holidays, and that's all good, again, the struggle for true freedom, not the Emancipation Proclamation type, but real freedom, the kind that no one can change in any kind of way, shape, fashion, or form, the kind that no law, no bill, no amendment can really have an effect, and obviously for in many ways it hasn't. But, you know, we know that much has happened to our people, much will happen to our people, but nevertheless, we have an obligation to continue to do the work that our ancestors, of course, started, and in some instances finished. There was many accomplishments made over the years, but certainly there are many, many more that must be made. Well, tonight we're going to talk a little bit about freedom, but not just talk about it. We're going to really go a little bit into how to obtain it. You know, there are many realms of freedom, of liberation that has to be dealt with and looked at. And certainly we talk about many of those realms here at New Day. But we have to also talk about the type of freedom and liberation that comes from unification, that comes from the hard work, the ongoing work of doing various things that is going to bring about the type of freedom and liberation that we really have to have. So tonight we're going to open up the chat room in about 10 minutes, and at that point we're going to bring on two sisters who represent the Yoruba people in North America, and certainly, you know, that's connected throughout the world. There is a very important conference coming up at the end of this month, roughly June the 29th through July the 2nd. And we're going to talk about that conference because, again, in talking about freedom and liberation, we have to really examine ongoingly again not only what has happened to us as a people here in North America and throughout the diaspora, but what we're going to do about it. We are in some serious kinds of situations, needless to say. Certainly, you know, we have a large amount of people who are incarcerated. We believe the majority are in there, unjustifiably so. We also believe that we have to assert our rights for self-determination and obtain that. And so in doing these types of things and talking about these types of things, certainly there are actions that have to come about. And so the conference that we're going to talk about tonight is called the Pan-African Grassroots Conference or Grassroots Assembly. Now, of course, there's conferences that go on all over the place quite often, and many of them are very productive and much needed. Well, this one for me is right on point. One, because it uses or says or addresses Pan-African. And for those who know, you know, certain terminologies, the word pan really means all. And so while we know that being Pan-African or thinking in a Pan-Africanist frame of reference, there are some thought processes that go with that. But the idea and the concept fundamentally represents all of our people. And this is such a wonderful approach to deal with dialogue today, because we still have all this division and separation amongst us, and unfortunately it is still dividing us. So I was so happy, I was really overjoyed to hear that a group that carries a tradition, a traditional religion, or I really prefer to say a traditional spiritual component of our people. It was wonderful to hear this phraseology, Pan-African, come from this group, because over the years what we've talked about here at New Day and in general in different circles, the fact that there are a lot of different conscious groups, spiritual groups, and so forth, and a lot of them don't want to get involved politically. And when I say politically, I'm talking about to the point of really examining issues such as homelessness, such as prison industrialized complex, such as these rotten, crooked politicians that we tend to want to keep pushing out there in front of us. And some of them, you all well know who. Some of them are really just sell us out over and over, and we sit back too many and co-sign. Well, truly, it is time that folks begin to stand up. And again, it was really wonderful to see a traditional system, a traditional African system amongst our people stand up, do what they do in terms of the idea and concept, belief system, but also realize, represent, and help others to engage in a dialogue that deals with some other issues other than just the spiritual component, which is all good, again, not needless to say. But, you know, as we strive for being whole, 360-plus, then certainly that entails many, many aspects. So tonight, again, we're going to talk about the Pan-African Grassroots Assembly that's being hosted by one of our oldest traditional religious societies here in North America, known as the Oyutunji Village of North America, or the Yoruba Society of North America. So we're going to give you a lot of information tonight. So, wow, what can I say? You need to just get ready, you know, get something to write with or whichever way you want to document or write what we're getting ready to talk about, because this information is really very important. So let's see, we're going to go to our live line probably in about 5 minutes. But before we do that, what I'd like to do, of course, is share with you just a couple of, just maybe one commentary right now from none other than Mumia Abu-Jamal. Next month, there is going to be another event coming up for Mumia. I believe it's going to be July the 3rd. And as it is every year around the so-called 4th of July weekend, because that was the weekend that Mumia was, of course, sentenced. Was he sentenced? Yeah, he was sentenced around July. Right. I think July 3rd, exactly. And so around that time, Sister Pam Africa and folks all over the country, in fact, all over the world, still make it known that the fight for Mumia to be free is ongoing and will not stop. So, again, around July 3rd, there's something happening here in Philadelphia. I think it's a hip-hop concert that's going to be going on. And, of course, usually in other parts of the country, such as New York, California, there's usually activities going on as well as in France, as well as in Germany, as well as in Italy. But at any rate, we try to keep abreast of Mumia's latest commentaries. As you know, he is in general population now, and he is continuing to do what he do, which is to be a voice for the voiceless. And so what we're going to do is go to one of the latest commentaries with Mumia Abu-Jamal. For those who have been keeping up with what's been going on in Egypt, well, needless to say, there's some serious stuff going on. We knew that. Anytime you had some women in Egypt talking about holding a million woman march, which they did try to do in March, but it was up this year, yeah. Roughly 200 women participated, and while, of course, it wasn't a million, for Egypt, that was major. They have 200 under the type of, government oppression that's going on in there. So Mumia talks a little bit about Egypt in this commentary. So let's check it out.
Betrayed, Egypt, with Egyptians massed in Tahrir Square, denouncing the corrupt Western-backed regime of Hosni Mubarak, the West was faced with a quandary. How to retain Mubarakism without Mubarak? After many months of parliamentary wrangling and electoral hijinks, the answer is now becoming clear. the military, with the backing of the courts, have essentially annulled Parliament, and by so doing, restored the status quo ante, the rule of the Supreme Council of the Armed Forces. And like that, presto changeo, Mubarakism without Mubarak. Hosni Mubarak was the chief servant of Western interests, and used his power to repress Egypt's dissidents and opponents of his regime. The Tahrir Square rebellions made his continued rule untenable. But if anything, he was the figurehead, frothing for the military, police, judicial, corporate complex, and as such, he was dispensable. So the early June hearings that sentenced the aging ex-ruler to life, that cleared his son, and cleared many of his regime's police and military for their immense brutality and violence against the people, cleared the way for this judicial coup of the popularly elected parliament. The judicial class in every society is always the most conservative, for their job is to preserve the status quo with the illusion of legality. The Mubarak years may have been years of monstrous brutality and finality with Western support, but an entire infrastructure of repression benefited from the billions sent in from Washington and Bonn. That privileged layer of Egyptian society wanted their position back, hence the counter-revolution, with the blessings of the Mubarak-era courts. Now, the real revolution begins, or its complete betrayal. From Imprisoned Nation, this is Mumia Abu-Jamal. These commentaries are recorded by Noel Henry.
Okay, again, that was, in fact, Mumia Abu-Jamal with one of his latest commentaries. And, wow, what can we say? Mumia is amazing to me how he, you know, just constantly keeps right on the pulse of whatever's going on today and is able to articulate it in a way that no one can and does like he does. So, again, we're very thankful, but needless to say, the struggle to bring Mumia home after 30 years does, in fact, go on, and we're going to continue to fight not only for Mumia Abu-Jamal, but, of course, for other brothers. Primarily, they are brothers who are political prisoners. We're going to continue to fight to rid of the whole prison-industrialized complex, of course, but, you know, we would be remiss if we did not make certain that we made it clear that those who have stood particularly for us in terms of our liberation, we have an obligation and a responsibility to make certain that we do everything possible to obtain their freedom. We're talking about Sundiata Ikoli, we're talking about Dr. Matula Shakur, Iman Jamil Alamin, Herman Bell, and Russell Schultz, and I mean, there's so many others who we can prove, and where it is explicitly clear in many of those cases where COINTELPRO certainly played a major role in them being incarcerated. So, again, these are just some of the things that we will continue to bring to your attention, continue to share with you, and certainly provide you with any updates that becomes available. Okay, what we're going to do now is, before we open up the chat room, which I think, again, will be about 5 more minutes, we're going to get ready to go, however, to our live line. And let's see, I'm going to open up, I do not have the numbers, all of the numbers that I need right here, so I'm just going to kind of take a guess here. We talked earlier about an upcoming conference that is going to take place June the 29th through July the 2nd. And this is the first of what I'm sure is going to be several conferences of this type. It is called the Pan-African Grassroots Assembly, and it is being sponsored by the Kingdom of Oyotunji African Village. Now, before we go to our live line to talk to two sisters who are the representatives, two of the representatives of this assembly, Sister Oludoje and I believe Chief Olomo, And if I'm saying their names incorrectly, I hope they will forgive me, but I will have it before the end of this show because I make certain that I pronounce our names correctly. So bear with me, sisters. I'm going to get with you in a moment so I can get the full names and correct pronunciation in case I did not say it correctly. But before we do that, I just want to give folks just a little more insight into this conference. And of course, we hope that you all will definitely attend. I mean, that's what needs to happen. You need to participate. And so we're going to give you information that indicates how you can do that. But just so you'll know, some of the areas that's going to be covered at this conference will deal with black midwifery, which, of course, is so important because we really need to start putting more in practice of having our own children, taking care of our own children, of course, but also from the jump, having them at home, delivering them ourselves. You know, to have our children delivered by the enemy, that's just a bad start right off the bat, needless to say. So we need to really begin to, change that scenario. The conference will also address issues dealing with sovereignty. It's going to also deal with traditional systems, a better understanding of some of our traditional healing and spiritual systems. The conference is going to cover a very important topic that many are dealing with today, known as polygamy, and one of my favorites, polyandry. Oh, yeah. We definitely need to talk about that one. So that just gives you a general idea. And, of course, as we said earlier, everything that is relevant to the development of a people, to development of our society / community / villages, and certainly as it pertains to nation building. How can we begin to really approach that in this day and age in the 21st century? These are questions that must have some real, concrete, productive, holistic answer. So that's what we're going to do tonight. We're going to have that kind of dialogue. So I'm going to open up our telephone line, and I know this is one of our guests, but unfortunately I don't have the exact information that I needed with me. But what I'm going to do is open up the telephone line, and the last digits of the number is 7452. And I know this is one of our guests, but I'm not sure which one. So, sister, would you please identify yourself, and we're going to get on with our dialogue for tonight.
Well, absolutely. Good evening to you, Empress, and we're so glad to be here. We are Her Excellency Igbe Rohingyade Oludoye, and that is the title, the proper title, which means Rider to the Crown at Oyutunji.
Oh, wonderful. Good, thanks. Thank you so much, my sister. And you may have to repeat it just a few more times for me so that I can really hear it. I'm usually pretty good with names, so once I hear it a few times, I'll pretty much get it intact. But thank you for joining us tonight, and we are certainly looking forward to this dialogue. I guess what I'm going to do is there's another sister that I think I need to bring in as well. So, hold on one moment. Let me just check something. Okay, we're going to try 0047. Sister, are you there? The last digits of your number is 0047? Okay, maybe not. All right, let's try at 9360. Sister, is that you on that line? Okay. Okay, remember, if you press 1, that indicates to me on my board that you want to get on. So I'm going to try one more time, 9360. Are you our other guest for tonight?
Aboru, aboye, aboshishe.
Oh, wonderful. Okay, great. We have both. All right, my sister, would you please give us your name?
I am Awofasi Erumshewe, and I'm calling on behalf of my godmother, Her Excellency Igbo Alashe Ayin Alomo. And due to a time restraint in her schedule, she will not be on this call this evening. However, she is willing to give comments and commentary at a later date.
Mm.
Okay, wonderful, very good. All right, I'm going to try one more because we have one more signal here that looks like they're trying to get on. I'm going to try one more, and that is the last digit of your number, caller, is 0047. Are you attempting to join us for this dialogue? Okay, maybe not. All right, just remember, whenever you want, that's indicating to me that you want to join the dialogue. And we certainly are going to invite folks to ask any questions or make comments a little later on, but right now we're going to go right to our guest, and we're going to talk about, as indicated, the Pan-African Grassroots Assembly that is taking place June the 29th through July the 2nd. All right, now let's go right into that and talk about what it is and why is it being called.
Oh, well, we thank you. This is an absolutely wonderful forum. I listened to your intro as we came in of freedom and liberation, and I was thinking, wow, how auspicious is that, that people now are in an age where they say, well, something's got to happen. What is it? Mm-hmm. And how the Pan-African Grassroots Assembly came into formation is really, really moving in that groundswell, if you will, of how people now come together, have a dialogue, have think tanks, exchange information, create collaborations, create partnerships all over this country, but doing so in the setting of Oyutunji African Village, which is an amazing venue in itself, 43 years in age, established in 1970, off of the heels, obviously, of another movement that we could certainly put under the umbrella of Pan-African thinking. And so a group of activists, community activists, spiritual leaders, some other ancillary chiefs of Oyutunji all came to a point where they said, you know, we need to take the movement forward. How are we going to do that? How are we going to bring true power back to the people? And it really began in January with a conference call of people, some there in Philadelphia, some in Dallas, some in Chicago, Michigan, and of course residents there in Oyutunji that just got on the phone on Tuesday nights and began to vision how to have a gathering that invited people who were concerned about making different choices at this point in our world history. And that really is the heart of it right there in terms of how it came to be.
Wow, that's wonderful. And definitely the timing is just perfect, especially, you know, right now there's such turmoil, and certainly with the economy the way it is, with the violence the way it is. I mean, each week now we make certain that we highlight the fact that the rate that our sisters are being violated all over the country is like you've never seen before, and the types of violations that we're seeing. Just this week we got two more reports, one from Florida where a sister was meeting with her former mate. They worked to exchange their child and met at this location, at an agreed location, and he doused her with something and set her on fire.
Wow.
And, you know, we get these reports like daily. Last week, I just gotten back from Benin, and of course, being faced with a few weeks of reports being missed, we get the report that a sister in Chicago, 8 months pregnant, a cop decides that he's going to give her a ticket because she's parked in a handicapped zone or lane or whatever, and he decides to give her a ticket, and you know how our sisters are, sometimes she tore it up. He tased her three times, 8 months pregnant, 30 years old. And so I'm saying all of that to say that it is obvious that this thing now of what we're dealing with in this country is in a whole nother realm. I mean, we've been oppressed. Our people have been oppressed, of course, for a couple of hundreds of years where we were literally hung, and it was very visual. But now this thing is so sophisticated, and people have become so, like, unsensitive to it, that you can now taser a pregnant woman or set a woman on fire, and people just stand around and go, oh, wow.
Exactly.
This is our Wolf Ozzy again.
Yes, Mr.
P.
Hello. Come on in.
Hello.
Mm-hmm. Yes, go ahead.
This is not just something that's happening in this country. This is a universal thing that's happening. It's also a cosmic thing that's happening. Due to the fact that women are trying their best to be heard after so many years, so many decades, that it's causing a rumble throughout the universe. We will be heard. We have to be heard. In fact, during the upcoming assembly, there are also women in IFA that are going to be studied. I'm doing a drum workshop as a female. I'm doing a family drum workshop. So these are things that will continue to happen as women continue to assert themselves, but we can't stop. My godmother, Aina Olomo, has been a champion of women forever, and she's done a fabulous job with working with the assembly to bring women into the forefront. We have to be there.
Indeed.
Absolutely,
indeed.
Absolutely. We're so glad. We want to comment on that, you know, the assembly has been put out there, but just so that we put the groundwork down, annually Oyetunji gives some 14 festivals throughout the year, and it just so happens that our Ifa festival, which for those who don't know, the Sacred Oracle of Ifa then is what Yoruba based that intersection of their culture and their spirituality on, the full essence and cosmos, if you will, the spiritual order of one's mm-hmm. destiny from birth to death here on the earth. And it's just, again, a very auspicious time for us to really put our destiny up in front of us very visually, very graphically, as we have discussed here, and determine what are our tools in terms of acquiring true freedom. Back to your theme for this evening, you know, there used to be a time where, you know, a Rosa Parks or our SCLC or many of the historic movements in this country would come up and say, no, these aren't your rights and you can shoot for more. But now we're actually, as our host has brought to our attention, we're actually facing a point where people sell their own freedom. They, you know, they blindly are creating or perpetuating their own oppression. And the idea of coming out back into nature, coming out of that matrix, if you will, of constant chatter and disorder, to take a peaceful time in the woods in the South Carolina Lowcountry to perhaps immerse yourself in an area where there are positive people, movers and shakers who said, nope, sorry, I'm done. I know that I have to forge a new path here. I know that I cannot send my children off to a building where, you know, who knows, there could be a bomb threat, shooters, anything could happen at this point. Same thing with women, that we have to come together, unify ourselves in a way that we work for and with each other. And of course, we've seen, you know, the tremendous breakdown of the family over these past decades, 2-3 decades, and we're hoping that this assembly moves in the direction of restoration.
Oh, absolutely. Well, I tell you, my sister, I'm certainly looking forward to it. You know, before we go to the next area of this discussion, I just want to say in response to what our sister just indicated about our women, you know, the Million Woman March is the largest gathering in the world of any women anywhere ever, and it reached a cross-section of, you name it, from A to Z. But unfortunately, in these past almost 15 years of attempting to bring our sisters together, I had to deal with some realities in that whole matter. Mm-hmm. And while these things are happening to our women all over the world, you know, I'm a strong believer in that you have to know how to walk and chew bubblegum at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
But certainly take care of the situation where you're right, where it is right in your face. You see,
yes.
It's more realistic to address it when it's right within your reach. But what I'm finding is that, and I know some bad sisters, I mean, strong, committed, etc. But what I have literally seen with my own eyes, that if there is not a male who is more or less sanctioning something, it won't move beyond a certain point. Okay, and I could really elaborate on some people that we all know well as leaders or whatever, and I've sat in rooms with them to talk to the, you know, to talk about the issue of women, and the women will agree that, yes, we need to do this and that. But let me tell you, if other entities within that group, organization, or society doesn't sanction it, it's not happening. And it has been 15 years of bringing 2.5 million women together, trying to bring that forward in some real action. And that, let me say, that was more than a notion. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
But at any rate, what I'd like to also talk to you about is, and this is another area that I'm hoping will be discussed at the conference, and that is, we talk about self-determination. What we found over the years is that folks that were really strong and committed about fighting for our people got caught up into the 501 syndrome, or I got to get a grant, or I got to get some corporate sponsoring. So will there be any kind of dialogue about how we need to focus a little more, or actually a lot more, on being self-determined, being independent?
Well, absolutely. As you were speaking that, I was thinking about a video that will be premiered there on Friday evening at our meet and greet. And in fact, it should be up on YouTube. We quarterly do a program called Inside Oyutunji, and it gives an amazing glimpse, a collage, if you will, of many, 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 many grassroots organizations and movements throughout our country. And what came to mind as you were speaking were the fabulous works of the D-Town Farms in Detroit and also the Black Oaks Community Center in Pembroke, Illinois. Particularly the group in Detroit, because we remember when we were up there for the U.S. Forum on Social Reform that they were really just in the beginning of food sovereignty and how do we get these community gardens and, you know, how are we going to fill up our community in an area that has all abandoned houses and pretty much a ghost town. And, you know, one of the first things that came up in that conversation was, oh, well, have you applied for grants or, you know, how are you funding this? And Brother Malik just looked at me. He said, no, sister, we ain't working with no grants. We out of pocket here. We've got a point of self-determination where we're going to put the seeds in the ground, we're going to water them, and we're going to grow them from here. If those other good parts come along, and they did, you know, 2-3 years later, now when we look at that movement, it's amazing. Will Allen and Growing Power has gotten involved, and certainly they have had quite a bit of assistance, but the ground floor of any and everything done in those two projects were done out of people's self-determination, and it is just phenomenal. I know that it will be absolutely inspiring for all of the participants of the assembly to see that and have an opportunity to talk about how that works and through Why Hunger in New York, how different communities like that who put their self-determination, as you said, right up in your face and say, you can do this. You know what I mean?
That's
you
right.
Don't have to wait for a grant to be awarded to you or somebody to give you a handout. This do it for an example, and I was just saying that to my granddaughter here as we were talking about some economics of, you know, going into high school, how do you raise your own money? And what came to mind was a lady at one of those programs in Chicago who gives us the information, do we know about the Good Samaritan laws that allow us to go and rescue food that is just good food, that is just thrown
right.
away because,
that's
you know,
right.
it's the end of the store hours or whatever.
Right.
And these
right.
people, my goodness, they are moving moving so much food up there to emergency providers and soup kitchens and shelters for women and children. And they just did so. They did so off the backbone of their determination. And again, we feel that this this nature disconnect, this point where we don't have to do it. You know, everything is at a store or on the cell phone or on the computer, and we don't actually have to put our mind and attention, focus our energy so that our action catches up with what it is, the way that we really want to go. Are we being led, or are we moving in the way that we really want to go? Yeah.
All right. Now, that brings us to one of the other areas, of course, that we advocate here strongly, and that is independent education. And I see that that's also one of the topics that's going to be addressed, independent education and homeschooling cooperatives. This is something, again, how on earth do people expect for our children, our nations, our families to really advance if the enemy is educating them?
Exactly.
I mean, that just makes
right.
no sense to me.
Exactly.
Right. My daughter just put my grandson into an independent school. She actually pulled him out of the public school, started homeschooling him through the computer, one-on-one with a tutor, and then found a wonderful independent school that pushes for education and pushes for being responsible for your own education,
right.
And it's not a warehouse. That's the beauty of it. It's not a warehouse. They also teach them the old manners of how to be respectful to themselves, to their elders, and, like I said, take responsibility for your own education.
Absolutely, and historically, this has been the model that Oyetunji has lived by. Oyetunji, of course, has always educated their own children. Yoruba Royal Academy is our institution, and, you know, it just is phenomenal, really, now looking at the second and third generation of those graduates that have gone on to colleges, all over the country, did very well. In fact, the young lady that is leading the Black Midwifery workshop think tank is one such student who now runs a wonderful midwifery clinic and is very, very holistically viewed. And it is all the difference, you know, in an independent school where you're looking at the whole child, the astrological readings around the child, where the child is, what their strong points are, what their weak points are, who their family is, what is their model of learning, how do they take in information. You know, questions that we would think that would be in certain assessments done in the public school system. But again, your point well taken, when in fact you move out of your culture and your traditions, your ancestral customs, and into the mainstream of else's.
Absolutely. Well, you know, it's so wonderful to kind of hear, and not just hear, but to know that you know, a group or society has, in fact, maintained some of the principles that I was certainly taught in coming into the movement. It seems that so many of our people didn't realize when we were being duped. And what I mean by that is where at one point there was such a spirit of, you know, having independent schools, supporting independent schools, developing independent schools, and all of a sudden this big rush came in called, have a charter school.
Yep.
And it was such a diversion. I mean, and don't get me wrong, I mean, of course, in a lot of situations, it was an improvement for the everyday kind of public school thing that was going on. You were able to get, you know, some things done a bit more, I won't say progressively, not to that extent, but, you know, just a bit more. But what people kind of did was forgot that, okay, even though you want to do that or can do that, don't abandon the idea or the concept of having our own, for real. And that is exactly what happened here in Philadelphia, happened in New York, happened in Washington, D.C., and in other locations where it's
happening in Cleveland, also.
Black. Right.
Mm-hmm.
It is again wonderful to hear that, you know, our people are again kind of resurging or bringing this idea forward again with some real kind of ability to show that it has in fact worked, it can in fact work, and needless to say, it must work now for sure. Okay, are we still on?
I hear you.
Okay, great. All right. Sometimes we get a little glitch here in our system, but okay, we're good. So now with that said, we are, of course, inviting educators, independent thinkers, folk who are interested in doing homeschooling or are already involved in homeschooling. I think these are people that we certainly want to see at this conference.
Also, I'm doing a family drum workshop.
Okay. Now, what will that consist of?
That will consist of me teaching not only children how to drum, but also their parents. And they will be drumming together and creating a drum orchestra.
Oh,
because a lot of
wonderful.
Times parents will push their children out to try something new when in actuality they want to try it. But they're afraid of whatever, being embarrassed or not being able to do it. And I make it a comfortable situation where they feel that they can do it. And by doing so, and the parents and children working together, it's a beautiful thing that happens because they drop their inhibitions. They have a lot of fun. They learn new things about each other. And so by the end of my workshop, everybody will be playing together as an orchestra.
Okay. Okay, you know what? I think we might have lost our other sister, and I think we might have, I'm going to check to see and make sure that, okay, sister, do we have you back? Let's see, 0047?
Yes.
All right. Okay, somehow we lost you. I thought we had lost someone because I was looking. Okay, we have you back now. Great. Okay. Now, let me see. The other thing, too, I'm going to check another line. Sister, you're at 7452. Did you want to join in on this dialogue, or did you have a question or comment?
Yes, I was speaking, but of course our technology gave way, and we had to recharge the phone. So here we are back again. We hope we have a better connection.
Okay, very good, very good. All right. Okay, so now, again, this conference is taking place June the 29th through July the 2nd. Now, how can people get involved? What kinds of things do you need for folks to do other than just come and participate? What are some of the other things you need for folks to do?
Well, there's absolutely still spaces open for people to volunteer or come in and, be part of the work team that helps host it. But a lot of the information, obviously, is on our website, oyotunji.org, oyotunji.org. And there are persons who choose to register. Certainly can do so. There are still openings for craft vendors, which would be wonderful, people who come and really bring the spirit of entrepreneur and independent economics to the forefront through vending this entire event. That would also be welcomed totally. But the participation, and I think just overall, in case we don't get it in later, we want to acknowledge that much of the assembly will be videotaped. There will be products that come throughout the year because this is the inaugural event, and it does plan to be an annual event. Also, a number of the presentations and the resolutions, if you will, that come out of each of these think tanks and workshops and dialogues will also be bound into a manual, if you will, a grassroots movement manual that will also be available. So the best direction for listeners right now is to certainly, put it in your favorites, oyutunji.org, so that you can, you know, return to the website even after the assembly has gone on, if it is not in your means to attend this year, but you want to keep up or again, connect to possible partnerships or collaborations in any of the areas that we're discussing, and there certainly are a number. Do always check back with us at the website, because ongoing throughout the year, we'll have a lot of information from the assembly that will be going on.
Okay. All right. Now, just so folks will know, and we're going to give out that information, several times before we close out tonight, meaning the website location and telephone number, email address. But just so folks will know as well, because sometimes we have people who are listening on the podcast and won't necessarily be able to get to their computer right now. What is the fee for the conference, and what about lodging?
Well, our early bird registration just ended, which people could have gotten into, adults will say, because right off the bat, all children under 18 attend for free. But as of this time now, the adult registration is $75 per person. Oyutunji African Village is located off of Highway 1721, nearest to Exit 33 off of I-95. And at Exit 33, we have several hotels, if that's a choice that people want to make. We feel it's a little bit costly, as we do have camping available in Oyutunji, and we have the KOA that's also there at the Point South. So, again, people have that option to, you know, have the complete experience. Come in and stay with us in Oyutunji. The camping is just like a minimal fee compared to what you would pay at a hotel. And they can then truly experience life in an African village because, I've been in Oyutunji since I was 12. I'm 57. So there's there's a lot to be said for waking up and having the movement of your day guided by the sound of an African drum that's telling you what meeting or what gathering is coming up, whether it's in an hour or a half hour or right now. And so there are many, many, many charming things about African culture that tourists who come to Oyutunji every day experience, and certainly people that do come and make the pilgrimage and stay a few days or even a week and longer that want that experience. And we were on a show earlier today where we were, emphasizing that, it may seem extreme for some people, or they don't have, maybe Girl Scout or Boy Scout background, and they go, I don't know. But the idea of it is that, look at the thousands of lives that would have been saved or differently arranged in the situation of a Katrina had these skills, these basic living skills in the wilderness. And it's not completely primitive. There's electricity. We have the Oyo Horsemen meeting house. Of course, there's the Afim, there's the palace, and there are a few guest accommodations within Oyutunji. But primarily, there'll be camping. People can bring their tents, and or you can come and rent a tent from us. So we make that a strong suggestion in these economic times where people may not want to just kick out that extra $200-$300 on hotel accommodation.
Great, wonderful. Now, going back to one moment, I wanted to make a comment on our sister talked about having a drumming session, and this was for the entire family. I'm really pleased to hear this because over the years there's been kind of some myths, and not just myths, but some actual practices that I've seen in various communities throughout the U.S., meaning sometimes you would sit or see a drum circle, but for some reason there have been times where I have observed where the sisters were not welcome to participate.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm really glad to hear that not only is a sister going to conduct this particular workshop, but of course that it's for everyone. Because again, I had the opportunity to observe where there was traditional drumming taking place, but sisters were not allowed to participate.
Mm-hmm. Well, I would love for the EAA to address it, and we love that that opportunity comes forward. Traditionally, it is the type of drum coming from an area of many belief systems around drumming and women in drumming, and certainly women, red women, Native American women, and their style of drumming, and women in different parts of Africa that play drums that are played in the water, so awesome that they look like gourds. So I would just speak from my knowledge, which came from a concern, a medical concern for the womb, the health of the womb of a woman who plays kungas or large djembes, drums where that vibration entering around the reproductive system was certainly a concern. But and then again, it really does come down to really understanding our culture so that we don't perpetuate what we have experienced in this country as discrimination. And so, you're really dealing in two different areas, because quiet as it's kept, the society of drummers in traditional Yoruba communities then is predominantly male and is called Egbe Onilu. And, once you really begin to understand the culture of secret societies and, how people are ushered or enter into each of those societies with what purpose and what destiny, then it kind of, it kind of jumps into a broader room of discussion than genders or sex. It definitely does. But we are glad that families have a way to come together around vibration and sound, because as we well know, sometimes words get in our way. And sometimes when families have an opportunity to, express themselves more creatively or differently or musically, then healing goes to another whole level. And that's what it's about right now.
Absolutely. And again, the drum is so... it's so important for us as a people, and certainly that's been evident. The mere fact that it was illegal at one point in this country, the drum. So obviously it must have been something for them to literally not want us to play them.
Exactly. Yeah, I was shocked. I remember that, to actually have that in your memory. I can remember the day I was in Atlanta, and I think that's where I was, why don't we go on out to the park with the drums? And they go, in this state, it's still on the books. There's a law that says you can. I remember just looking at, I couldn't even hardly believe it, but it's very true. The spiritual threat or the perceived spiritual threat from African drumming that historically has been dealt with over and over and over and over again.
Yes. Wow. Well, this is going to be an exciting gathering, needless to say. Now, let's move on to a topic that is certainly very dear to my heart, and that is... this area is one that you do not hear much about. Now, you hear often about polygamy, but you do not hear often about what's known as polyandry. So could you tell us a little bit about that? There is a session I see that's going to be held, or that will be a discussion that will be available on that topic. But I'm sure there are some listeners who don't know, maybe have never even heard of the term.
Yes. Or the history, and again, one of those pivotal reads is Black Women in Antiquity, where we really get, again, a broader sense of, I always have to come back to, is it really the ownership of people's sexual genitals, or what happens that these systems of what I think is a larger compound family unit or a working family unit within a larger village. What happens to that concept? And in America, you know, other than the Mormons or the other very distorted ways that we see what I guess America would term multiple marriages or multiple wives or multiple husbands, just as being something that is beyond their whole scope of, you know, the Barbie and Ken or this is how it's done and these two people. But, of course, traditionally, you know, in African culture, marriages are about two clans that come together, two families that come together. And it happens that the bride and the groom are standing in those positions then as the representation of that union of clans for many, many different reasons. And as you said, very few people know historically that there are over 33 institutions of marriages or types of marriages in Yoruba culture. Yeah, all of which are not about sex or love. Some could be about land ownership or joint business ventures or, again, partnerships and collaborations between families. And so the area of marriage, you know, takes a longer or broader view. But this is a topic that is being revisited at this assembly. We're very excited about having some of the Olori, again, a different society, the Egbe of Olori, which are the queens or the women who became wives to the founder of Oyetunji, that also present, without a doubt, will be several children, I'm sure, from the Oyetunji family that have grown up in a house or compounds where there was more than one mother. And so even in the village, just as getting around our titles here this evening, and of course it's a mouthful to say Igbe Rohingya Day, but, you know, the normal stance in the village is that every woman is addressed as Ia, as a very polite term, which means mother, because it does take a whole village to raise a child. And so I think what's been overlooked in this particular hot topic, if you will, is the fact that, you know, sisters, whether they have an agreement and an alliance among single women that says, well, this is how we do it, these two are going out to work, these two have the education of the kids, these two have, you know, they set up a system where their household and their family and their financial structure can gain some momentum and move in the direction that they want to go in. What we have observed over the years is that, you know, the Barbie and Ken flavor, you know, quick as it goes to divorce court, it seems that everything that comes out of it is left on tragic terms. You know, there's not enough of an inheritance, actually, to the children. They certainly can't inherit the jobs that people have. And so, again, those mainstays of how we connect and how we unify ourselves as a people begin with that first family unit. And if you have, if a man, that's the premise, if a man can afford to have more than one wife and certainly sees the productivity of his family and his compound going forward by having more than one wife, then that's the way it should go. That's a logical outcome. And on the other side of that coin, then, yes, you're right. Historically, many people didn't know that, you know, queens had studs, they were called. You know, it's looked at from the patriarch, then it's, of course, concubines that they have then that may bring more children into the family. But there are history lessons that I know I've had from some wonderful elders in Oyetunji about women who were married to very powerful and successful men in their community. And when that man died and left that entire compound of many wives, well, then they had wife stepped up into that position as Bale. She was thought of, and the Bale then is the head of the compound, and not as readily as we would think, a male head of the compound. There can also be female heads of compounds. So it is a wide topic to talk about in 2012 and whether or not women are ready to put down certain petty emotions that hinder the upbringing of children or the financial stability of their home. Well, that's the question that I guess we'll answer at the end of the month when that dialogue opens.
Wonderful, wonderful. We want to remind everyone that the chat room is open, and if you have a comment or a question that you'd like to post there, please feel free to do so. And we're going to also open up the lines in case you have a question or a comment for our guests for tonight. We're going to do that in a few minutes as well. Before we do, let me ask, I think I remember reading that there was the possibility of if a person wanted to be a presenter, is that still open?
I don't think it is. I think that we have actually solidified now all of the primary lead persons. But I know I was in conversation with a lady coming yesterday who was one of those who offered the presentation. And I said, well, you know, this is set up so much out of the context of big conferences and the expos or the civic centers. I mean, this is in a village designed to be roundtables, panel discussions. And so even when the presenters apply, there was a position of sort of moderator leadership in that. But in other terms, we're saying, you know, if now your actual application, which I think it is on the website, is not accepted, please don't let that deter you. Please come, have your voice be heard, be a part of the think tank, be a part of the roundtable discussion, because there are no presenters that have been chosen that are not open to hearing, you know, what everyone has to bring to the table.
Okay, wonderful. Mm-hmm. Okay, we're going to go to our line. I think we have a caller that has a question or a comment. Caller, you're at the last digit of your number is 2406. Do you have a comment or question on our topic for tonight? 2406? Okay. Maybe not. All right. Remember, if you push 1, that's indicating to me that you have a comment or a question. Okay. Let's see. What we're going to do then is go to another area of the conference. And now, are there any other sessions that are kind of going to be geared to the children? I know that our sister talked about one for drumming. So. Is there any other session?
We do have child care provided during the day for parents that want to attend the sessions, and then, you know, now we're speaking smaller children. And I have a number of grandchildren that are coming in tow with me, so I know firsthand. I hope to be sitting around at the very least in some song circles, some cultural storytelling for our preteens, our early teens. Afine Farms is just abundant in vegetation and all types of learning experiences. I'm very, very excited for young people that would be coming into Oyutunji maybe for the first time, but certainly coming out of an urban area, a city area, and then being exposed to gardening, food sovereignty, activities and games out on the farm that we hope will inspire them at the very least to go home and begin a little garden on their window shelf if possible. So there are a number of things, I'm sure, in terms of the male rites of passage and female rites of passage, which both of those are firm segments inside of the workshops being offered. There will also be ceremonial and cultural activities going on. There's, of course, the parade of our ancestors, Parade of Egungun. Again, as we mentioned, this is the Odun Ifa. So young people then, there are what's called an Ayo parade, where with rhythm and musical instruments, it doesn't take a lot that the kids are encouraged to just join in to a musical parade that they create that goes through town announcing different activities that go on. So there are a lot of choices, actually, for young people that will come in. They'll get to see many, many things from composting to how to grow mushrooms to, you know, food that's growing in the fields. So there are a lot of other things than perhaps just, and the movies that are going to go on from time to time from Great Benin Films. So there are a number of choices for young people.
Wonderful. Now, of course, we've heard a couple of words here that some of our listeners may not be familiar with. So let's kind of revisit that for a moment just to kind of give a little more insight into some of these words such as IFA. Could you tell us a little bit about what is IFA?
Okay, well, that certainly would be a short one, but I'll try to give you the overview. Ifa, when people look up Yoruba, or, you know, at this point now in our technology, you can Google anything. And so we actually go in and study the Yoruba tribe or traditional Yoruba culture and or spirituality, you are without a doubt going to hit Ifa, although it sounds like it would start with an E for us. That's an I, IFA, which is the basic oracle or the basic system. Every civilization, every culture, every spirituality of a people has a certain system that it follows of proverbs, mythology, history, the occult sciences that are all formulated to guide one in making decisions about everything concerning life on earth. Ifa would be such a system, much the same as Christians depend very heavily on the teachings of the Bible. Then you will find most Yorubas conduct themselves and their code of conduct or their cultural codes of their households, of their lifestyles, based on Ifa, based on proverbs, odus, scriptures, if you will, stories, again, mythologies of how humans best dwell with the forces of nature or the forces around them, the spiritual forces around them.
Wow, okay.
Yeah, and that's definitely in a nutshell. There's whole lifetimes, as I've been told, Ifa, the study of Ifa is a lifetime journey, so that certainly would just be in a nutshell, the overview.
Okay. Now, the other word that I want to revisit is egungun. What is that?
Egungun. Well, egungun is our spiritual committee. I like to consider it for myself personally, or our spiritual board of directors. Again, if we look across to the Christian term of angels, those light forces that no longer inhabit a physical fleshly body, our egungun then is the fullness of our clan, our deceased dead from our family. And Egungun also specifically lets us know that those are elevated spirits of light, whereas, again, now you're getting into things that people will learn, certainly, during the assembly. We were talking today with one of our tour guides who's going to be a wonderful town crier in terms of kind of keeping people on. Okay, going on, okay, should I bring a candle here? What should I do? And that's a great thing if you've never been to an African village to have such a person kind of clue you in on some of the things that maybe you've never, ever been exposed to. But the parade of Egungun, the ancestral masquerade, if you will, is a wonderful experience that we feel then allows because we do feel that the entire movement of life as we know it here is an agreement between the living, the dead, and those waiting to be born. And so the parade then of Egungun, the spiritual embodiment of a particular clan of people, or in the case of our national Egungun, then that covers many of the people that you honored at the beginning of the program, our sheroes and heroes that have gone down in history, our freedom fighters, our political, our community leaders, many of those families of the prisoners, political prisoners you spoke of, all of them then can be, their spirit family are considered Egungun. And so that's how that term is used.
Okay, wonderful. And you know, I think it's important to point out that there's a large number of peoples, and we're talking about different cultures, Japan, for example, China, Korea, Indian. And I'm saying this because these are things that we find in many, many cultures. And so, you know, it goes without saying with African people being the originators of civilization, then certainly, it would go without saying this would be a very normal, natural thing. And so we think it's important that we share this kind of information with our people in this day and age because, of course, there are so many different types of teachings today that oftentimes, you know, we'll kind of say, well, that's not a good thing or, you know, that's not something we should do today. But again, I just want to point out that so many other cultures make it a point to do this, and you will see it very visually on an ongoing basis. So
it's the power of reasoning. It's the power of reasoning, you know, and I say it a lot in the teaching that we do with ancestor veneration. We have the exact same conversation that you're having now in terms of, you know, just really, you know, slowing people back down. Again, this matrix system of what we're distracted by and what we make our decisions by might take us by the fact that, you know, in the White House of this country, you have a painting of every single president that has ever served this country, and under that painting is a light, and if that light ever goes out, it is replaced. And yes, really, and so courthouses all over America, you're going to find paintings of dead judges and lights under them. Why do you think that is? You know, it's not just the pretty little houses with the incense burning at the fish market or the nail shop. You know, ancestor veneration is everywhere present in everyone's face. And so why do you think that it is that, you know, the African tradition of it was a little bit smothered, where, you know, statues could go up in the middle of the city, or, you know, now every city in America has a Martin Luther King Drive or Boulevard or whatever, you know, and people never connect. Wow. You know, is it just a memorial, or is it more to it than that? You know, and until we really make it personal to ourselves, and, you know, at my age, then I definitely have as many ancestors as I do people that I know on the earth realm. So it becomes very, you live long enough, as my grandmother would say, it equalizes itself in terms of what you trust, where you put your faith, and how your beliefs grow stronger. And for lots of people, that comes from the people who lived before them, which we know is ancestors.
Absolutely. And, you know, my sister, I make it even more fundamental for folk, or a little clearer in this little example. I say to people, you know, every day we are put in the position where we have to look at and deal with other people's ancestors every day.
Every day
you're spending money. Every day you are handling a piece of currency that has somebody's ancestors, some other people's ancestors. So
that's
you are
right.
Literally forced to deal with somebody else's ancestors
right.
Every day.
Exactly. Every day. Every single day. And look at the amazing choices we make over those dead presidents on the gray paper.
They're going to make certain that, you know, some selective folk are going to always be remembered, looked at, dealt with every day.
Every day. It's true.
Wow.
Yeah. This is the way we begin to really talk about some ways that we as a people reclaim some level of power. I know with the big discussions between the U.S. dollar and euros, you know, certain contingencies of communities and upper-class people have already, you know, recreated, stepped all over those dead presidents and said, we'll create our own system of financial exchange, and are doing it. And again, if we are a people that don't know our history, we're doomed to repeat it. If we don't know that we come from great, amazing systems of trading, of bartering, other means of exchange than that ancestor worship of the dead presidents, then that's the only one we'll rely upon. Mm-hmm. We have to broaden the view. It's incumbent upon us, for the sake of our emerging leadership, the leaders that we are raising in our children and our grandchildren now, that we take a broader view. And certainly the position of this event is that we remember culture is the chief magistrate of our destiny. Without our culture, then we really don't have a good map or a good guidebook. We really don't.
Mm-hmm. I know that's right. Okay, I have one other area that I'm certainly interested in, and I know others are as well. And I want to get to that one before we, of course, go to one of the bigger ones, which is, of course, economic development. But again, I kind of hit on it a little earlier, and that is black midwifery. What kinds of things are going to be presented in regards to that? Because I know some sisters, you know, who are really very much into learning this and practicing it and, you know, getting as much information as possible. So what kinds of things will be presented for that particular workshop or presentation?
Well, we're excited about it, definitely, because, you know, midwifery, very broad term again, but we'll keep it in the realm of birth and babies, as the lady on the movie said. But, of course, you have midwifery anytime a woman comes and attends to another woman. She is midwifing her, whether she's midwifing her through the birth of her child or the grief or loss of a loved one. There's midwifery on numbers of levels. We're excited to have watched E.B. Amy Oshun Tolewa, who was a student in the House of La Matrona, a school of midwifery in Asheville, North Carolina, and is now an instructor for that school. And the level of study there is just amazing. I think it's good for every woman that just wants to know more about her general health and reproductive health and well-being, whether or not you want to go the route of a doula, who again is a person that assists a woman at a time of birth, or whether you want to go far enough to say, I can be responsible for holding the space, holding the sacred space as another life comes in. Because ultimately, of course, the mother is going to give birth to the baby. But the midwife then, in this particular subject matter, covers so many things, teas and herbs that are nutritional and of vitamin aid to good nutrition, to not only good health in the pregnancy, but certainly post birth, when you go back into things that fight the depression and so forth. Again, you kind of hit on it in the beginning of the program that, you know, when we look at men for number one, and then men outside of our culture or our village, you know, birthing or attending the birth, the entrance of ancestral souls returning into the earth realm, we say, you know, what's wrong with that picture? You know, really, while you could have studied enormous in books and education and institutions, the fact of the matter is you've not laid down and actually done this. And so, you know, what is your level of really moving with a woman who would like to capture as much of that experience in the fullness of that experience as possible? And so we know, of course, when it enters into the Western medical realm, there are just layers and layers and layers of where that whole experience is completely sedated. And so whether or not women come into this midwifery dialogue, roundtable discussion saying, yes, I'm, you know, definitely a candidate for whatever reasons I would choose to have my children at home, very strong statement, very, very independent and definitely a motivator of true freedom, you might just want to be better educated or feel more comfortable in a medical setting. If in fact, you know, your body dictates that you would have to have medical attention to give birth. There are just so many things that women have given their power away so to speak, in terms of knowing about our bodies and what our bodies are doing in bringing forth life. I would say that within the 45 minutes to the hour discussion that's there for midwifery, women who attend and or men who attend that session will have an eye-opener to the empowerment of self-care during a time of pregnancy or expecting childbirth. At the very least, they're going to get an eye-opener to how to address that spiritually, medically, emotionally, mentally, because Tolewa is that type of holistic instructor where you will get it from every single facet. It's really exciting to know that she's offering that.
Wonderful. Now, on that same note, you mentioned teas and herbs. Well, are there going to be any sessions that deal with general holistic health healing? And certainly, you know, from a traditional standpoint, are there anything that's going to cover some of that? Because, you know, our folks today, needless to say, are really, you know, the health situations are insane. And
even though
there's a lot of information and so forth available, more and more people are having diabetes and all these other kinds of things, and at such a young age. So, you know, it just seems so important now that we provide as much information as possible, and certainly some of our traditional ways of healing. So are
Absolutely.
There any sessions on some of that?
Well, as it turns out, I am the actual presenter or the lead person in a session on Sunday, I believe it is, of sacred health and well-being. And and it is a broad discussion. Of course, it will shape its form based on the participants or others that enter into this dialogue. But we hope to go forward with some really, again, because, you know, this is not a weeks-long assembly, or we could take our time and have real, you know, half-day and full-day intensives into it so that people could go away with various aspects of what it is. Do they want to move from traditional medicines to homeopathics or to herbs, teas, those types of things? What does nutrition have to do with it? But we feel, just again, as the moderator of that session, that we'd like to open, you know, people's minds and that think tank, if you will, to say, you know, why does every elder you know have a pill box with 37 different pills? You know, why? Is that okay with you? And, you know, how do you think that some of the elders and ancestors that we have descended from lived up into their 80s and 90s? And my goodness, they didn't have half of what we have. They didn't have microwaves. They didn't have the convenience of all these sorts. They did not have those things. And so what really was in grandmother's kitchen or in grandmother's cabinet that served for, you know, cough, winter colds, the simplest of things that now, you know, it's run to this doctor or run to the urgent care or run to the, and so I hope that the energy that we put out there in this particular session at least brings us to the dialogue of, you know, are we willing to be responsible for our own health? Are we willing, you know, for many of the people, you know, physician, heal thyself. Are we sitting in that seat? Because if we're sitting in that seat, we can have a great conversation about some of the things that are in our medicine cabinets, our medicine bags, our kitchen cupboards, that and the foods that we're eating and how we are taking our health and wellness. What responsibility are we taking for that before we just zoom on into urgent care and say, well, I have this ache, or I don't know. You know, because you do know, it is your body, it is your temple, and you're the person in charge of feeding it every day and keeping it watered. And, you know, there are certain basic things that you can, that we should take responsibility for caring for much more than we do our automobiles. And the tragedy is that people have more understanding and education about how to care for their car than they do their own body. And that is, you know, that's the truth. People are twice as quick to figure out how to do their own oil change rather than to figure out could they not go to the doctor or could they not do a prescription here. Is there some change in what they're eating or an additional vitamin or supplement that's needed? And how do they even evaluate that? Or are they just at the whim? They have to take someone else's word for, oh, take this, and it will do that for you. Maybe. Now, there may be side effects. You know, what kind of choice is that? How firm are our choices in our own power of being over our health? And so we hope that that dialogue on Sunday will open some conversations for that.
Absolutely. It just seems that nowadays that for whatever reason, our people do not want to take on the responsibility of their own lives.
No,
you
exactly.
know, and it goes without saying, how can you have a sense of freedom if, in
what?
Fact, you won't even deal with the most basic thing of your own life, you know, having
right.
some kind of say about what you should not do, and mm-hmm. in doing that, thinking mm-hmm. about some of that, you know, using
mm-hmm.
some kind of rationale with some of that.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And actually, it kind of segues into the larger conversation there in terms of economic development within the African-American communities because, you know, not only will you not take the time to go in and do your own evaluation about, you know, what could be, what you could do, what changes you could make to re-empower or reinvigorate your body, your vitality, your wellness, but, you know, in the larger term, are you really thinking about how you supply your oppressor by continuing to perpetuate this just ugly thing over there in the pharmaceutical world. And, you know, if you don't think it has real power, I don't know, look again. You know, ask
wow.
yourself, well, what really happened with the Obama medical care or what really has Congress up in an uproar and whose pockets is this really digging into and what money slowed down if our elders don't have 37 different pills in little pill boxes. And so when we really consider what we're perpetuating by not taking responsibility for our health, you know, that's another the whole broad discussion, not to mention the same thing with broken food systems as to why we have to move to our own food sovereignty, because you said it, and I so support you, and it is that, you know, we got to have a new definition of freedom. What does freedom really mean in 2012 for people now?
Mm-hmm. That's
yeah.
right. Because obviously what we thought was going to be freedom is not.
No.
You know, when folks were fighting for civil rights and so forth, of course, to be able to sit at the lunch counter or to sit on the bus. I mean, you know,
mm-hmm.
of course, these things, you know, it's had its place. It was good. But in reality, was that really freedom? So
yeah.
while we applaud those efforts and the sacrifices that were made at that time, we have to also look now to see the mere fact that the prisons are full. And they're building
mm-hmm.
more.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I mean,
exactly.
so many other things that have now, you know, filled those gaps
right.
where we can vote now. But the fact of the matter is some other things are happening. Our children
right.
are certainly not getting educated and
right.
so forth and so on. So, you know, it seemed like there was some kind of trade-off.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. What
yeah.
happened was the freedoms or the rights that then became prevalent, you know, happened because the entire minds were on lockdown. It was really okay to present these rights because people's minds created their own imprisonment. They're imprisoned in their own minds as to what they can or cannot do. And, you know, the wake-up call is that there is no freedom in $20,000 worth of credit card debt. There is no freedom in you know, $50,000 worth of medical bills for one downfall in your health. These types of things that doesn't create freedom. You know, that means that you're an indentured servant to whoever are the people
that's
that
right.
you owe.
That's
a fact.
Right.
And so again,
and
what is your definition of freedom?
They're getting our people younger and younger.
Absolutely.
Our 20, 21, 22 year olds. Youth or young adults are now in debt of $25,000, $35,000 student loans.
That's right. That's right. And that's not freedom. That's
no.
not freedom. No. That's indentured servitude to someone that you owe. And so it's that these types of things, you know, we have a whole generation, basically, as we've seen the commercials go forward for this assembly and bring back Angela Davis and the faces of people in movements gone by, and knowing that, you know, there's an actual generation out there that can't even relate. They would have to go simply from the newsreels or the history books. They cannot even relate, and so it really is a really good work and a really big work that the steering committee of YAM, the YAM Assembly Movement, has, as we said, from all over the country come together and said, you know what, at the very least, we have to re-engage or revisit what are the rules of engagement for the people's movement right now. When do people have their real sense of power? And what do they do with that power? And how do they come out of the abuses of power that have been imposed upon them?
Oh, yeah, I like that. I like that. Now, before we go to our last topic for tonight, and we're going to, well, maybe not our last topic, but definitely one we want to kind of elaborate on, and that, again, is economic development. And I'm going to also add to that and not just say economic development, but also finance and wealth building, you know. Mm-hmm. But before we do that, give out the website address again, and if there's an email address or a telephone number, let's give that out again.
Absolutely. Oyotunji.org, Oyotunji.org. is the website, and you can get everything there from our calendar events for the year to all of the particular applications and registrations for this event, June 29th to July 1st, the Pan-African Grassroots Assembly. Just whenever, again, if this is not up for you, that you can see your way clear, we'd love for you to make the pilgrimage at any point, and perhaps you'd like to call ahead and, you know, make reservations or allow us, if you're bringing a group, to set up and prepare for you. Our Office of Tourism number, 843-846-8900. And you can always write to us at info@oyotunji.org.
Wonderful. All right. Now, let's go again into dollars and cents.
Mm-hmm.
And again, you know, we are in the 21st century, so we've kind of realized that some of the things that we were taught or told in recent years wasn't really exactly what we need to be focusing on. And that, again, for me, is this idea of economic development. While, of course, it has its place, the reality is, from what I've seen, is that other people don't really deal with economic development. They deal with finance and wealth building.
Mm-hmm.
And so what happens is, especially when you are in a urban setting, economic development tends to limit us. It limits our scope. It limits our comprehension in how we exercise or utilize monies or assets. And in fact, we're not even really taught those concepts like assets, commodities, things of that nature.
Mm-hmm.
When our people are taught, quote-unquote, economic development in the hood, or outside of the hood, it limits us. So we have learned that nowadays we have to be a bit more inclusive. Now, we talked earlier about some of our traditions, and that, of course, was and is bartering, trade, things of this nature. So it seems that for us, we've got to now, again, begin to assert these concepts within our framework of economic development / financial development and wealth building.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So now, if folks have some ideas or proposals or other things that they may want to present, will they be able to do that at this session?
Absolutely.
Or in a future session?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, there are two plenary sessions where, you know, so that's a full group, and at other times during the assembly, there'll be different workshops going on concurrent with one another. But I think in the plenary session, I know that there is an economic discussion and development, but again, you know, our economics and our wealth is really at the heart of every single topic in this assembly. That's the first thing, you know, the very same feeling that we have about redefining freedom in 2012, we have about redefining wealth. How do we define our wealth and abundance? And, that grassroots in the title of this thing is so important, so that people, while they can move around the 401ks and the, you know, all the parts of that economic illusion, I will say, from where I'm sitting. Compared to the people who are in jail and the people who are still sitting in offices on Wall Street, is to say, well, now what is our wealth as a people? Well, our wealth is our children. Our wealth is our land. Our wealth is our health. And so, you know, as a grandmother of 10, I say to people continually, you know, how critical it is for me now to have focus on, you know, what will my children do to feed themselves 20 years from now? What will they do to house and shelter themselves, you know, in the coming years? And what will they do to maintain their health? Because all of those things, you know, are factors of how we create wealth, whether we do so by trade or barter. You know, the really, really wise or wisdom comes to these emerging leaders and these next generations by realizing what are the needs of people around them and how do they fill them, you know. And I'm not going to take too long, but this was such an interesting story that came back to me a few months ago about the man who began the Woolworth chain here in America. And it turns out that this person was just a little broom, sweet boy in the big department store. And at what he noticed, you know, in dusting the shelves and sweeping the floors, he noticed what wasn't selling in the store. And so he went to the store owner one day and said, you know, I think we ought to just put a table outside and just collect all the stuff in the store that doesn't sell normally and put it on sale. And, you know, the guy kind of laughed him off, and he said, well, all right, we'll give you a little table out there. You collect it and get it together, see what happens. And he did. He put a sign out front and said, you know, five or dime, 5 cents or 10 cents. And the rest is history. And it's that kind of thinking that we hope at this particular assembly and other opportunities that communities have to come together and talk about how their young people will move into a role of livelihood. I don't think it's any longer a discussion of, well, you know, black people got to get educated. When they get educated enough, they'll get a good job. When they get a good job, they'll get a good house and they'll have a car and all like that. See, that's pretty much outdated now. We've run the course on that. And as you said, what has it turned up? Well, it's turned up people under 25 years old who are already in debt in the tens of thousands of dollars. And so, and are beholding to hope that they have a resume that swings them into the JOB that will answer that kind of debt. And so we are hoping that the African and the cultural point of view of how families build economic security, there's a word, economic security, so that it can move from generation to generation. It can expand throughout a village or throughout a community where everyone becomes part of that workforce. And I just have to say, you know, our travels with Oyetunji in recent years to Growing Power and people who own their own grocery stores out there in California, I mean, a food co-op has just gone to a whole nother level. They employ themselves. They run their stores. They have young people who have little bicycle businesses going to pick up the coffee grounds for the compost and take it over here to the community garden, and these kids earn their money. So, you know, we can't say that it can't be done and that it's not being done, because it is being done. And it's very much outside of the realms of whether or not, you know, you've completed college or have the degree or have the right connections and are going to get the right job. As we said, we kind of feel that that conversation now is a bit outdated.
Absolutely. And with that said, you know, with what you have said, obviously the dialogue of what we call sustainability is going to be very important, because see, that gets into, you know, really to obtain something, but then also the ability to keep it, to sustain it.
Yes,
and these are two of the things that we have to begin to stress a bit more to make certain that our people begin to understand that, you know, we put a lot of emphasis in the past on obtaining things, you know, again, obtaining the right to vote or obtaining the ability to go to school or the obtaining of this or that. But then there comes the reality of, so once you got it, how do you keep it?
Right.
Because that's a whole nother game that's being played.
Right. Or did the getting of it, you know, break down or dissolve your power to hold it and give it some longevity? A lot of times, you know, we look at it now, we're not knocking the thousands of churches on every street and every block, but the fact of the matter is that, you know, if you could compile the resources and the finances that went to having, you know, five different houses of worship on the same street, as opposed to whether or not people could talk to one another and worship together, in terms of what that would do for starving children, the homeless, I mean, it goes on and on. It goes on and on. And so once again, we come back to, are we going to grow our food, and what is sustainable about growing our food in the midst of our climatic changes, in the midst of everything that we're dealing with in the earth? And are, you know, the whatever, $100,000 homes built, you know, from all the fabricated whatever at Lowe's, is that sustainable, really? You know, what are the repairs? What are the costs down the line? You know, and again, this is why we think that the venue of Oyutunji is so amazing, because in its 43-year life, Oyutunji has actually lived through that discussion of, okay, well, this is what we did when we were primitive at huts. This is how we brought forth the traditional Yoruba architecture. And now we are moving towards sustainability, which takes us to the level of earth bags and earth ships and stucco and things that will go the long haul, things that will not run us back to Lowe's or Home Depot 2 years from now. Yeah.
Wow. All right. Well, this has been truly a very fruitful and inspirational dialogue. We have about 10 more minutes left, so I want to kind of move a little bit into some of the what one may call more politically charged areas. What is your position on reparations, African reparations?
Wow. Well, you know, that it's interesting, because the evolution of this particular gathering came about through a presentation that Dr. Umar Johnson made at Oyutunji last November. And the discussion of reparations, I remember in the initial steering committee conference calls, was pretty big. And, you know, and there is a group of people, or many people, you know, that hold that conversation, and whether they really believe it or not, in a level of national debt, or, you know, where we are now, or whether they think that a government who, you know, basically hasn't had gold to back up its dollar in years now, really could come from anywhere and say, okay, let us give you your 40 acres and a mule, and, you know, we owe you this for all the people in your family that did all the free work to build this country. You know, for me, I assume you're asking me personally, I think it's a lofty position. There are so many avenues to that conversation. You know, sure. In large part, you know, if the fact be told, if we were some alien visiting from another galaxy and came down and looked at the food stamp payrolls, you'll go, well, you know, that looks like the children of the people who built your country. And now they get food every month because they apply for food stamps and they get it. And, of course, you know, one could say food stamps and another person could say reparations. And so, but we find it when we look at the big picture that it's not even a coin. It's not even a drop in the bucket of return coming back to people whose lives were sacrificed. And we say whole lives where, you know, someone went from the time that they could stand up and work until the time that they left the earth working for someone else without compensation. So, see, that to me is where the word reparation gets larger than life, because really you can't pay me back for all the relatives that made that type of sacrifice. You know, all the banks in Switzerland couldn't do it. But then do we decide is an equal exchange in this day and age? What you know, it's almost like a sliding fee and a regular fee. You know, what really happens to the communities that you recognize or acknowledge? I think that would be a big part of it in reparations for me, is the actual public acknowledgement that something is owed, a big something is owed. And so whether or not you do that in the way that education is more readily available, or certain foundations say, well, we are feeding the hungry, we are feeding the poor, because we recognize that, you know, for their thing is generational, why, how they came back down from slavery and came back from post-traumatic slave disorder, these types of things, and they look at it and they acknowledge it as real. And again, you know, kind of like we were speaking about in the ancestor veneration, you know, when we kind of look over and look at the Jewish people and their foundations and their wonderful memorials for the Holocaust and what has been given and continues to be given. And so we said, well, is this conversation really feasible or possible? Sure it is. Sure it is. But probably we need to come together in a way that says, no, this is what we want, okay? It's not as easy. Yeah, this is what we want because this is real. You don't have real money to pay back the descendants now. You know, go ahead and cough that one up. It doesn't even exist. You don't have the real dead President Green money. You don't have the real gold. So how would you do this exactly? You know, would you, like the red people, would you put us on certain plots of land and give us casinos and go, okay, here, make your money back by having these. And so it's a definite discussion that is worth having. I would love to have it with people who consider themselves the people who, you know, advise on CNN to, you know, how the black community is doing with its dollars and so forth and so on. But again, I think, you know, the buck stops with the person in the mirror. I mean, we could have another whole program on here this evening about where our dollars, no, really, about where the dollars from the African community are going, you know. That, and I definitely encourage you to do that at some point, because people don't look up the numbers in terms of the little hair and beauty supply stores and the billion-dollar industry of hair weave or getting the nails done, all of these parts that, again, are serving someone else's golf game. If you want to pay yourself back what is owed, probably we should begin by being more selective of keeping our wealth in our own community.
And rest assured, during these past 4 years of this radio program, oh, we have definitely had those dialogues and produced numbers and percentages and all of that. But, you know, I found that in reality, you know, the dialogue is always good, needless to say, and we will always continue to have it. But what I have found there to be, unfortunately, too little of, and that is plans of action. Plans of action that literally can produce, you know, something from those dialogues, meaning to really sit down and strategize, structure some things that we say, okay, here is a proposed plan. Can we agree to just try this?
Mm-hmm.
You see, this is where I kind of find we are kind of going awry, because I'm not hearing, at least as often or as much as I think there should be, those types of suggestions or proposals or possibilities to address some of these issues. This is one of the things in developing the Million Woman Movement that we have began to do. For example, now you just mentioned something critical about the what they call the beauty hair industry.
Mm-hmm.
We did some research and see how much money is being spent in those areas, and the fact that most of these labels or names of products or whatever are not black owned.
They are
not.
Does
it say black something? They're
yeah,
not black
they are
owned,
not.
You know?
No, they are not.
So we come up with some ways to begin to address that, and this year for our anniversary, we'll be introducing a component, a new component of MWM called the BBB Co.
Mm-hmm.
And the BBB Co is a cadre, a membership of the Million Woman Movement that consists of beauticians, braiders, barbers, and cosmetologists.
Mm-hmm.
The B, beautician, B, braiders, B, barber, and cosmetologist. And
mm-hmm.
it is, in fact, a tribute to Madam C.J. Walker and
Wonderful.
Stephen Biko.
Mm-hmm.
See, so we understand the sound of thing and the power of the rhythm of what we say. So
mm-hmm.
this group of folks are for not just any of our beauticians, of course anyone can join, but specifically those who want to do things in their community.
Mm-hmm.
So this membership has a responsibility, and the responsibility is, as a professional in our community, you have an obligation to do something in the community. And then we map out what some of those things are. And at the same time, we offer them advertising and other types of marketing things in order to promote those diets. And that's just one of the ways that we are beginning to make certain that we can put some kind of niche in that market proactively.
Absolutely. 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 That's what's needed, you know, and the idea is really very deep in the mind and very deep in the soul, and that's one of the reasons that, again, we are so glad that this particular assembly is going on in Oyutunji as opposed to, you know, a Hilton or a Holiday Inn somewhere,
because
it gives us an opportunity to step out and really determine, again, what are we willing to do, you know? And I mean, and your point, you know, when we say, well, yeah, so, you know, how come we can give such good lip service to these things,
mm-hmm.
but we don't see the strategic plan come out, or we don't see the action plan come out of it? And one thing that His Royal Majesty Obaide Fumi II has been emphatic about to the steering committee is that certain resolutions will be formed, certain action plans,
right.
no matter how skeletal, will come out of each of these sessions of the assembly. And as we mentioned earlier in the show, it will be bound into a hard copy of the assembly activities, and also videos of the different sessions will be available. But, you know, it's just a fact. You know, Rosa Parks and the whole bus boycott happened because black people weren't afraid to walk. They simply were not afraid to say, okay, this is not acceptable. We will not be giving you the money to get on the bus. We will get up 2 hours earlier, and we will walk. And that took a major, major, major decision. And so when we talk about how come the best dressed, well dressed, politically astute, socially, culturally astute people can enter a room and give lip service to all of the woes and the plights of life, but no action plan can come out. I mean, you know, honestly speaking, most of those people are in the same credit card debt. They have to worry about, you know, getting their rental car back on time. And I'm not being callous. I'm just saying, you know, you cannot change lanes when you are just entrenched in one particular lane. If you are entangled and entwined in a particular lane that you know has you really as a financial prisoner over and above being a political, mental, or emotional prisoner, then what is your independence? What is your ability to move out and say, I'm going to do action step number one, action step number two? You know, what is your ability to do that? You're really just giving lip service to something, to wishful thinking that you hope will be another direction for our children. And you know, we're hopeful to say that there are quite a few intentional communities. There are people now who are gathering and solidifying a different path to go down than the status quo, than the ones that just lead to more greed, more capitalism, more consumerism, more debt. But we have a long way to go. We have a long way to go into just really looking at our trash and making it become our treasure. The whole reduce, reuse, recycle, you know, again, just, you know, it takes me back to a conversation I had with a young lady in the store. I didn't mean to have it with her, but she seemed perplexed on the baby aisle in front of the diapers and the wipes, and she went back and forth between this product and that product and this product. And so I went up to her and I said, well, honey, you look like you can't quite, you know, make a decision. And she was trying to get the Best Buy. And so I said to her, I said, well, do you know that, you know, we used to use soap and face cloth, and what we would do is wash them out and maybe have like a little lunch baggie or a plastic bag that we could keep it in. And so what I'm going to challenge you to do is just add up all the money you spend on wipes for the month and the year, and then determine whether or not that's a good down payment on a car, or it may in fact be a savings toward your children's education. There are so many other things you could do by taking that little time to employ, particularly at home, a face cloth and a bar of soap, and maybe just restrict your wife's to. And this light went on in her, little eyes lit up like she had never even thought of that. No one had ever even told her it was okay that you didn't have to use wipes in your house, and that you might save $10 to $20 a month by just using a face cloth and soap. Yes. Yeah, so this is what when we say that there's a generation now that doesn't know any different. They didn't come from a place where necessity was the mother of invention. You know, they simply came, you know, it's like children now with the food, good food movement, you know, that they don't even understand the farm concept. You ask them where a potato comes, they could tell you McDonald's French fries. They don't know. They, you know, until they actually get out to a farm and see that these things grow out of the ground. And so this is shocking for some people, but it's sadly true, sadly true. And it's this type of mindset that we have to change if we really are serious about recognizing our wealth and being able to put forth an action plan toward wealth and well-being.
Well, I'm sure we are going to have a wonderful dialogue and certainly a very productive session come June the 29th through July the 1st. Unfortunately, we are out of time, my sister. I want to thank you again for taking the time to come on tonight, and we're going to try to get you back on before the 23rd. I mean, the 29th.
Wonderful, 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 wonderful. Well, we've enjoyed it. I'm just even glad to know about your show. I really am. When I saw it coming up this evening on the itinerary, I was like, wow, I hadn't heard of this show. And so I'm really glad to know that you're out there and you are keeping that African worldview, however it comes across in your various guests and the various conversations that go on this program. You know, my heart is light to know that of the good work that you're doing. And we so appreciate being on your show this evening.
Well, thank you so much. And I'm certainly looking forward to us building our sisterhood and certainly bringing forward the spirit of our ancestors for true liberation. Before we leave out, because we still have our podcast on, just give out the website address one more time and the email information. And then we will close out for this night.
Yes, North America's oldest authentic African village can be connected. You can connect with Oyotunji online on the internet by going to oyotunji oyatunji.org, oyatunji.org. You can write to us at info@oyatunji.org. And if you're in the South Carolina area, the Low Country, down around Beaufort, South Carolina, we're just about 20 minutes south of Beaufort, about 45 minutes inland from Hilton Head, 45 minutes south of Charleston, and 45 minutes north of Savannah, and you find that you're in the area, give a call to the Office of Tourism, 843-846-8900. And we certainly hope that you will stay abreast of, if you're not able to be with us on the 29th of June for this first inaugural Pan-African Grassroots Assembly, that you'll stay in touch via the website for all of the good news and videos and DVDs and booklets that will be coming out of the assembly.
All right. Again, my sister, thank you so much for joining us. And we're going to get you back on, as I said, before the 29th, because we always do special editions of our show when we need to, and we definitely need to make certain that we, you know, get you back on again and let folks be able to ask some questions this time. So, family, we thank all of you for tuning in and for continuing to spread the word that we're here. Of course, we're in our fourth year here at New Day Resurrection and Liberation, and I want to remind you again that in October we'll be hosting our 15th year anniversary observance. It will be, of course, this year, a Black Women's Social Justice
Affirmation
and Solidarity Forum.
Wonderful.
Remember, also, December, we'll be going to Benin to hold our first international session in building our Pan-African Women's Union and Federation. All right.
Exciting.
We'll be giving you more information on that on our next program. Again, family, thank you so much for tuning in. And, of course, we thank the Olatunji Village for this wonderful event that's coming up and the first step in bringing forward the, I think what we might want to say is more like a new, a 21st century kind of Pan-Africanism.
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah, thank you so much, Empress, and you have a wonderful weekend, remaining of your weekend, and we look forward to speaking with you again.
Indeed, my sister. Ashe. All right, family, we're going to say peace and blessings to all of you. And remember, of course, we always say Ma'at Hotep. We greet you with Ma'at Hotep. We leave you with Ma'at Hotep, because we always know that we must strive for justice. With their justice, there will be peace. But remember, there can be no Hotep without Ma'at.
Mm-hmm.
There can be no justice without peace.
Ma'at.
And there certainly won't be no peace without justice. Until
That's
next
right.
time. Two time nana. Odabo.
Odabo.